You are now listening to
Radioactive.
Once for all, I knew to my sorrow, often and often, if not always, that I loved her against reason, against promise, against peace, against hope, against happiness, against all discouragement that could be. Charles Dickens, Great Expectations.
He had now seen the full deformity of that creature that shared with him some of the phenomena of consciousness, and was co-heir with him to death. And beyond these links of community, which in themselves made the most poignant part of his distress, he thought of Hyde, for all his energy of life, as of something not only hellish, but inorganic. Robert Louis Stevenson, Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
And with that, welcome to this week's podcast. I'm Soraya Marashi.
And I'm Zuhair Ali. Now we can all recognize that quotes like these and the novels and poems they come from carry themes and messages that are still relevant in our society today.
Topics like young love, women's rights, social class systems, race, religion, and human morality are usually supported, criticized, or generally discussed in these classics. And these topics are hardly unfamiliar to us now, some more prevalent than ever before.
That being said, in the age of mass media, these books of literary merit and libraries, bookstores, and our own shelves are just gaining dust. We're here to talk about why we as teens have disconnected from the written word, what that means for the future of our generation, and how we can mend our broken relationship with classical literature.
Now, Zuhira, before we talk about anything else, as teenagers ourselves, I guess we should try to justify this broken relationship from our generation's perspective.
You're right, Soraya. It's a fair question to ask. Why don't teenagers read classical literature anymore?
I'll tell you why, Zuhira, and it's really quite simple. It's boring, period, point blank. It's outdated, old-fashioned, uninteresting, and hard to relate to. I'll be the first to admit that, even though I've taken advanced English classes since middle school, since it's my favorite subject, some of the works we read are just plain boring.
I get that, Soraya. And honestly, I'd rather binge-watch 3 seasons of Teen Wolf and scroll through Twitter for hours than pick up a novel from the 19th century. And I'm starting to think that that problem doesn't just belong to our generation. I think you could argue that our broken relationship with classic literature is simply because of the time we're living in. Here's a clip of an interview Mila Espinosa did with her mom, Maria Espinosa.
I have not read any book all the way through, ever. I am a very visual person. I run out, my attention span is really short. And I've had a lot of people read books for me and review them, and we've had many discussions, but I don't, honestly speaking, have any memory of ever reading any book completely through.
But Zuhira, there's clearly something very admirable and sophisticated about classic literature, a certain aesthetic appeal that I believe most people can recognize, which is probably why Maria uses books as decoration rather than reading material.
As long as the hardcover is beautiful and it is a classic, it has a home here.
When Maria thinks of classic literature, she sees the aesthetic of it. She thinks it's beautiful because it's classical. When other people think of classical literature, they see grown white men that they have nothing in common with. One of those people is my friend Aisha Ali, no relation, who's a student at the University of Washington.
What are some other books that are considered classical literature that you've read?
The Great Gatsby. And, well, it's a play, not a book, but Antigone and Oedipus.
Did you enjoy reading those books?
I enjoyed the themes, the moral of the story of Oedipus and Antigone, but I didn't really enjoy The Great Gatsby as much as those two. I think it was more just who the characters were and the type of lifestyle that they were living that I couldn't really identify with. And even though the central character, Jay Gatsby, isn't from an upper class background, he pretends to be that way, and that's the crowd that he wants to fit in with. And the other characters are from upper class and wealthy backgrounds. They're well educated, and I feel like I couldn't identify with their problems, which seemed more trivial because they were more about pleasing people and keeping up appearances.
Not only is it important to represent minorities in literature, but to accurately represent them as well. What I mean by that is, if you invite someone to a party, you can't just let them sit alone while you're there. That's one of the things that put Aisha off about classical literature, but what put her off the most about classical literature was how they villainized people of color.
For example, we read Jane Eyre in class. I'd already read the book, so I was familiar with the plot, but in class I noticed that the character of Bertha, the wife of Mr. Rochester, she's described as being of Caribbean heritage. So I assumed that she was a black woman. Yet her character is like the craziest and most savage character in the novel. And I thought that was interesting.
Your perspective matters. Take Uncle Tom's Cabin, written by Harriet Beecher Stowe, a white woman. Uncle Tom is portrayed as a docile slave that would do anything to please his master.
Now, the purpose of this was to humanize slaves and portray them as good people. But at the same time, the narrative relied on a one-dimensional depiction of the slaves, giving them little character development and complexity, which ultimately took away the novel's purpose to humanize these slaves. In other words, Harriet Beecher Stowe was writing on behalf of an oppressed group of people that, while well-meaning, she had little understanding of, which ultimately affected her message.
So it's totally acceptable to dislike a book because you disagree with its message or its portrayal of certain characters, or if you just can't relate to the characters in the book. The majority of books we read in English classes are written by white men with white male protagonists. So how do we incorporate a curriculum of major works with accurate representation of minorities in English classes? To have an accurate depiction of minorities in literature, you need to include literature written by minorities, and not allowing the romanticized images created of minorities to overtake the reality that we're real people who have emotions and aren't just characters.
So, there are probably a number of reasons as to why the youth of the 21st century have stopped reading literary classics. Many of them relate to valid concerns, like we talked about before, with inaccurate representations of minorities and general inconvenience. But that being said, the point of literature is not for convenience. If anything, literature should be inconvenient. It should grapple us with inconvenient truths about the human condition, inconvenient social commentary, and inconvenient sentences that, while difficult to process, make up some of the most beautifully structured prose and verse ever known to humankind. Yes, reading books of literary merit is hard, but it's supposed to be hard. Authors provide us with complexity in their writing through satire, figurative language, and so forth to make us think critically about the theme they're trying to show us.
If we didn't struggle through understanding these classics, we would be missing out on a key component of the masterpiece. That's why English teachers are there to help us out as we study some of these novels, poems, and plays in our classes.
And the wonderful thing about literature is that it's not stuck in time. It's a living, breathing form of art that takes on so many forms to match the times. In fact, my AP Literature and Composition teacher, Mr. Henry Lovell, agrees.
So I think that books are, you know, one of the best receptacles, if you want to call it that, one of the best ways for us to explore those topics. But I think you can find it today in movies. You can find it in television shows. Some of them, I think, are wonderful. I always use the example of Breaking Bad with my students, and I tell them, don't watch it. It's a little too violent. But that's a show that has a lot of depth to it, and it does make us ask questions, and we have to kind of explore how a seemingly good moral man can crumble to becoming something, so immoral. And that's very similar to what we, you know, explore in Macbeth.
But even with different forms that literature takes on, there's nothing comparable to the written word that a movie or podcast can capture. Which is why the majority of English class curriculum is centered around novels, poems, and plays.
You could take in 12 Years a Slave in 2.5 hours, but if you're going to read Beloved, it's going to take you, you know, maybe a couple weeks. So that can be a positive and a negative. I think that I might come away with more in the long run from Beloved because of the amount of time I spent putting into it. But also I think that typically things on screen are limited in what they can reveal internally, and whereas books are made for showing us the character's inner thoughts or even the narrator's comments on, you know, the situation. We get to hear the author's voice more so in a book.
But at the end of the day, we understand if you're not too keen on the idea of picking up The Sound and the Fury as a beach read. Maybe the point of classic literature isn't a matter of pleasure. Maybe, if we change the way we look at what we read and why we read it, we would discover that instead of looking at literature as a choice, we should look at it as a necessity.
Literature reveals to us the truths about humanity that we may not be able to face on our own. It shows us the faults in our societies. It allows us to find new and changing ways to fix the problems we face every day.
It may not necessarily apply to our careers and the advancement of the human population, as it does to reminding us of the complex nature of our humanity, which in itself is a story worth telling.
That's true, Soraya. We don't read to learn, we read to understand.
You don't have to read every classic out there. Just pick up something short and sweet, and then move on to the harder stuff.
When I read Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I couldn't really understand the changes in the character, but after a while I realized it was showing me that in the real world, people are more than one person, even if you don't know it, and you can't base their morality off of one thing they do.
And similar to you, when I read The Catcher in the Rye, I really got to know the character of Holden Caulfield, the angsty teenage outcast who showed me that innocence, if it even exists at all in this world, doesn't have to end with growing up.
And like the future of memorable characters similar to these, similar to us, paving the way for masterpieces to come. Thank you for listening to our podcast. We'd like to thank our editor, Jenny Osorno, as well as our mentors, Lila Kataev and Mary Heise, for making this podcast possible. We'd also like to thank our producer, Mila Espinoza, and the interviewees, Maria Espinoza, Mr. Henry Lovell, and Daisha Ali. We couldn't have done this without you.
You can find us at kuow.org/radioactive for more awesome content.
Coming up on the next Radioactive podcast, despite your skepticism, the stars will always have something in store for you.
I know it's people who are Capricorn were born in December or January.
So what do you know about it?
I just know that Capricorn's a goat.
Be sure to like us on Facebook at Radioactive Youth Media and follow us on Twitter at KUOW Radioactive. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the Radioactive podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review while you're there. It helps other people discover who we are. Once again, I'm Soraya Murashi.
And I'm Zahir Ali.
Over and out.
Radioactive!
Youth Media.